Good evening and welcome. It's KBC Arts. Arts and entertainment as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. The sole focus of tonight's KVC Arts is on Kenny Vance, one of the founding members of Jay and the Americans. Vance also served as music director for several films, with the first one being American Hot Wax, the biographical film about Alan Freed. Vance was not only music director, but he also appears in the film with a fictitious group, which would become quite real about 14 years later. We spoke quite recently about this and so much more.
From Brooklyn, and I mean right here in Brooklyn, on Flatbush Avenue. Is there anybody here from Brooklyn? The Planetones with Professor Capuano.
Oh, yeah. You know, American Hot Wax was the Alan Freed story. Alan Freed was a disc jockey that came to New York in the early 50s and started playing rhythm and blues records, and he called it rock and roll. And pretty much that's how his show started. And his kids, you know, it was a different world then. And we were growing up, and, you know, we were 10, 11, 12 years old, and starting to listen to that music, and it was just like, oh man, this music is really different from the music that adults had. And so Alan Freed became very famous, and at some point he ran the first ever rock and roll show, and that took place at the Brooklyn Paramount in downtown Brooklyn, and he advertised it, and kids from all over the city showed up, all kinds of kids, you know, going there. And you see American Hot Wax in the scene where we duplicate the Alan Freed show. Mm-hmm. There are all these policemen on horseback doing crowd control. And it was just a wild scene, a scene that you never, ever had seen before. So as a kid, I went to that show. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, my heart was pounding when I got in there. And, you know, I walked into the theater and Alan Freed came out on the stage in front of a 25-piece orchestra, and he had, you know, groups like The Heartbeats, Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers,
oh my God,
Fats Domino, Jerry Lee Lewis, Chuck Berry, Buddy Holly, the Everly Brothers, and all the doo-wop groups like the Chantels, the Flamingos, Pookie Hudson and the Spaniels. It was incredible. And, you know, you had never seen anything like it. And all of a sudden, you know, the people that you had been listening to on Alan Freed's radio show, there they were on stage. And, you know, as a kid, it was mind-blowing for anybody. So I had left Jay and the Americans. I was in Jay and the Americans since I was 18. We started in 1960 and had many, many hit records all throughout the 60s and early 70s. And in 1973 or 4, I made my own CD for Atlantic Records. And on that record, Dance 32 was the original version of a song, Looking for an Echo, that a friend of mine had written. And so even though it took 20 years for it to become a cult classic, that album wasn't successful at the time, although these people that were movie producers heard it in Hollywood, and they flew me out from Brooklyn to meet at Paramount Pictures, and they hired me to be the music director of American Hot Wax, which is the Alan Freed story. Alan Freed was the most popular disc jockey of all time. I think he made 6 movies, Rock, 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 Rock Around the Clock, just, you know, all of these movies that were based on him. So they said, oh, this guy, you know, would probably really be great. Not only, you know, did I do the song Looking for an Echo about growing up in Brooklyn, and then the echo was in the subway. So Looking for an Echo is a metaphor for finding that echo in the subway, because as kids, we would go down in the subway and try to imitate the songs that we heard on the Alan Freed show. And so if you were going to sing Church Bells May Ring by the Willows, for example, or Who's That Knockin' by the Genies, it gave you that extra echo sound, and you sounded really good. But not only had I done that recording, but I also had been at the Alan Freed show. So they hired me as the music director, and I put together all the groups, and I actually put together the Alan Freed show. So in those days, you had 24-track recording equipment in a remote truck. So they said to me, we need another group. And I thought, well, you know, I used to sing. maybe I could do it. So a friend of mine, Vinny Poncia, got me a bunch of guys called the Brooklyn Dreams. They were on Casablanca Records. They backed up Donna Summer on Heaven Knows and other songs. So we started this group, and then we needed a name. So, you know, I called it Professor Laplano and the Planetones. And so basically, you know, we were in the movie. And that started off, you know, a lifelong friendship with these guys. And in 1992, I reformed the group. And we've been going strong ever since that. As a matter of fact, we're going to be out in Cerritos, California, March 21st.
Yes, March 21st.
Saturday night with a bunch of people. Lala Brooks, who was the lead singer of the Crystals, Larry Chance and the Earls, and the Capris. There's a moon out tonight.
Yeah.
You know, just crazy enough, this music, all these years later, from the late 50s, you know, we could still draw a crowd of anywhere from 1,500 to 2,500. We just played with Bowser, you know, from
Shana.
He ran a show at the Mohican Sun, and there were 8,000 people there.
Mm.
And we played this summer in New Jersey at the PNC Performing Arts Center. There were 15,000 people there. So, you know, I just did an interview in London about 2 hours ago. And he says, what is it? And he said, I said, you know, this music just never went away. As a matter of fact, when you get in a cab in Manhattan, where I am right now, the door closes and you hear In the Still of the Night by the Five Satins.
Oh, nice.
Because they're promoting The Irishman.
Of course, of course.
All of that movie is scored with doo-wop music from the 50s. So, you know, whether people are aware of it or not, or whether they're fans of it or not, you talk to people and say, oh, yeah, I remember that song. Or I remember Sea Cruise by Frankie Ford. And so I said, how do you know it? You know, because they're 17. And they go, I don't know, but I know it. But I do know it. Did I answer your question?
Oh, you sure did. That was quite wonderful. And folks of my generation, we know the music because of our parents. But then other folks, there's been movies, you know, like Dirty Dancing or another Scorsese thing, Goodfellas. That brought Lala Brooks and the Crystals back into the forefront with Then He Kissed Me. That was incredible. So, yeah, Scorsese has been great about that.
Show me all of your mind in the still.
Mr. Jerry Lee Lewis!
You mentioned that beyond the Planetones, you also assembled other groups for the movie. Were you actually trying to assemble groups that would seem like Chubby Checker and his players and that sort of thing? Or were you just trying to bring groups onto the stage for background on the
Actually, I was trying to duplicate. So there's a Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers prototype.
Nice.
There's a Chantel's prototype. We did the Fleetwoods, did Mr. Blue and Come Softly to Me. I had to duplicate them. Chuck Berry is in the movie. Screaming Jay Hawkins is in the movie. I Put a Spell on You.
Yeah.
And Jerry Lee Lewis. And they're all in the movie. It really captures the essence of what was going on in those days in the music business.
When you did put the Planetones back together, were you considering any other names when thinking about putting a group together, or were you pretty much set on deciding to go with, well, the thing from the movie, the Planetones?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that it had some credibility, but I was wrong because I had done so many films in that period. After Hot Wax, I did Animal House. I produced John Belushi doing, you know, Louie Louie, and I produced the song Animal House. And then I did The Warriors,
which was
a cult classic. And then that was 1979. Then I was the music director on Saturday Night Live for a couple of years. And then I did Eddie and the Cruises.
Oh, yeah.
Which you're probably more familiar with On the Dark Side.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
So I did that, and then I kept doing that for a while. And then in the early 90s, I don't know, I just thought, you know, I got in this business to be a singer, and maybe I should just pursue that. I was in the position where I could do that. Hmm. And I said, you know, I'm just going to go with my heart, and I'm just going to do what I want to do. And unfortunately, you know, I didn't realize. I thought, man, if you have a great group, it's going to work. But it wasn't so, because people want to be able to put a name on a marquee,
right?
You know, that sells their place out. And I didn't really realize that at the time. And I just thought, oh, I'll do the Planetones and it'll be great. But it actually took about 10 years for it to catch on by being a group that wound up creating a following. You know, basically starting over again, really. And slowly we built up the reputation. And now, here it's almost 30 years later, and, you know, we're still going strong. It's just wild. I mean, there are pockets in this country where you can still play with this type of show and sell it out. And that's in the East Coast, you know, Connecticut and New Jersey and New York, Delaware, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh. You can sell it out in Orlando and in Clearwater, Tampa, and then everywhere in South Florida. People love this. And actually in L.A. You can go out to L.A. and draw a big crowd with the show that we have.
Yeah. As you were naming these places, let's just start with the Northeast kind of area. It seems you're pretty much naming where doo-wop was born in these areas, Philly and Baltimore and the Bronx and all that kind of thing. But then mentioning Florida, this is where a lot of the folks ended up retiring to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know what? It's a little bit of a misconception, because if you think about it, L.A. created an amazing body of doo-wop records, starting with the Cadets, Stranded in the Jungle, and the Jacks, Why Don't You Write Me, and Jesse Belden, Good Night, My Love, Earth Angel by the Penguins.
Oh, true, yeah.
And Don Julian and the Meadowlarks.
Oh, yeah, the Robins.
The Robins, Smokey Joe's Cafe by the Robins, who became the Coasters.
Yeah.
And, you know, Frank Zappa was a huge, huge doo-wop fan. As a matter of fact, he wrote a song for the Penguins called Memories of El Monte. And El Monte was a place where they would have dances. So L.A. had that. And then Chicago. You know, Chicago had the Spaniels, and they had the Eldorados, and they had Jerry Butler and the Impressions, For Your Precious Love. And then they had Curtis Mayfield, so Chicago had a big doo-wop presence as well.
So it wasn't necessarily just people think of New York and Philly and the Burn Barrels right there, but my gosh, it was across the country, anywhere there was a city.
Yeah.
Another side note, I'm very much a Frank Zappa nut, and I'm aware of Memories of El Monte, but with different configurations. It was the Mothers of Invention playing rather than the Penguins, but that's a really cool footnote. Okay,
well,
so
he made a killer doo-wop album, Frank Zappa.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Cruising with Reuben and the Jets, and also...
Oh, my God,
yeah,
remember?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's phenomenal.
The cover is a picture of them as dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved it. I loved it, yeah. I'm pretty sure that's the only Zappa address tonight. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR, streaming at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. This edition of KVC Arts is focused on Kenny Vance. He was one of the original members of Jay and the Americans. He served as music director for several films. We'll hear about this a bit later. In the meantime, though, the Planetones, which started off as a fictitious group for American Hot Wax, became a real group which is still touring with a stop near us quite soon. They also just released a new CD. It came out a little less than 2 weeks ago, on the day that Kenny and I spoke.
Absolutely, yeah.
That is
getting
too cool.
Such fantastic feedback on it. We really, it's a labor of love, and it just came out great.
On that, again, it's called For Your Love, and beyond the hard copy, which people can get, and I'm a hard copy person. I like to be able to read the liner notes and actually feel the stuff in my hands, if not the album.
Me too.
Yeah. But people can, if they wish, get it on Spotify and Apple Music and all that kind of thing. And we'll get more details on that a little bit later. But the nice thing is, this is a really, really nice disc. I have to say that Ladd sent me a nice package of a few CDs, and the ones that I started first and stayed on were the Lost and Found Archives 1 and 2. It was a little bit before I actually went to For Your Love. And speaking of Ladd, we should point out, your son Ladd, the song Devoted to You on your new disc. This features a wonderful accompanying vocals by Ladd.
Yeah, what a thrill it is to have your son do this with you. It's just wonderful, absolutely.
Did I see another Vance, maybe Greg Vance, somewhere as well for maybe production?
Yeah, he helped us. You know how all these modern guys sample things?
Yeah, yeah.
So we did it. We did a sample on one of those songs. We did the track of Teardrops, which is originally by Lee Andrews and the Hearts.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a group out of Philly. It's Matt, you know Questlove, the guy on Jimmy Fallon show?
Yeah, yeah, I know who he is. Yeah, yeah.
He's Lee Andrews' son.
Oh, wow. I did not know that. Oh, wow.
And so what we did was we used a sample of that, and we put it inside of our version of Teardrops. So, you know, while we're singing, all of a sudden you'll hear Lee Andrews sing. And my son, Greg, actually, he had to do all the timings of where we used the Lee Andrews stuff because we had to buy the sample from Universal Music Group.
Mm.
And, you know, in order to have permission to use it. So he helped us out on the CD as well.
That's right up there with Unforgettable Duet between Natalie and Nat Cole.
Oh, my God.
That's cool. Yes. That is really cool. We can thank David Foster for that one. But let's really, I'm here to talk to you about the Planetones, not so much David Foster. There's also on this disc, we have a Lieber and Stoller tune on here, Drip Drop. And folks would know this maybe from the Drifters or definitely from Dion. Now, this song makes me think about the fact that you, Kenny, you don't try to do songs like whoever else did it, nor do you make it so drastically different that it becomes, quote, your own thing. You just sing it.
You know, like if you asked a painter, yeah. You know, like, how do you do that?
Yeah.
You know, it said it's not like this guy, and it's not like that guy, but it's derivative of something.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. We don't want to copy those records because those records are classics.
Yes.
You can't touch that. It'd be like trying to copy a master painting.
Mm-hmm.
But these songs have lived inside of us all these years. And they live in our imagination in a certain way. They live in our imagination almost like the originals, but yet, you know, your own experiences and your own life gives them a different perspective. And that's how we do it. You know, I'm having trouble, just like you, you know, defining what it is that we do.
Man.
But nevertheless, the proof is in the pudding. When you listen to the CD, you go, oh, okay, I get it. For example, Drip Drop, if you really listen to it, it's a shuffle that has the track is sort of reminiscent of Wilbert Harrison's Born in Kansas City.
Mm.
And so he kind of gave us the vibe of how we wanted to set it up. So, yeah.
Yeah, beautiful. With that in mind, then, and having just spoken of Drip Drop, this is going away from the new album. It was so cool to hear your take on Swish Splash. Now, this one, you did give something unique with it, a kind of a reggae approach. I'm curious about how this manner of playing on this song came about, if maybe this was something you've always noodled around with. Talk to me about this one, please. Swish Splash.
Here's a story. 7 years ago, there was a hurricane in New York, Hurricane Sandy.
Yes.
And I lived on the beach. I lived south of Brooklyn, south of Coney Island on a peninsula in Rockaway. And the storm came up, and I had lived there for 40 years, had withstood many hurricanes, but this one took my house away. So I lost my house, and I wound up moving down to Florida. And there were several, certain things were salvaged. And I had these tapes, and another guy, an archivist, had come to my house several years before and had made copies of a lot of my archival material. And so I decided I was going to put out this Lost and Found. As you probably know, you know, I produced a lot of the early Steely Dan records with Donald Fagen and Walter Becker. Yeah. And I had a couple of demos that were preserved that no one had ever heard that I put on the CD, one being Take a Dip with Dinah.
Yes.
And one being Shuffling Up Your Downs.
Oh, yeah.
And those are Donald Fagen's songs that had ever come out. And so there was an eclectic group of songs that were on there, that some demos and some songs that had written for films that never made the film, and some old recordings that were just never really in any form of completion and never made it to CDs. So that's what the CD is. And it was so successful that it required a volume two.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, on volume two, the last couple of songs, one that's probably the most definitive version of Looking for an Echo, is on volume two of Lost and Found.
It's a nice live version, I think.
It's just a great live version. Yeah. Thank you.
So take a good look at my face.
Another nice cover that I wouldn't have expected from you. I don't know why I make these assignations to various people, but Tracks of My Tears, that's just a really cool take that you do on that one. I think that may have been on volume one.
I think so, yeah. I did that one, just acoustic guitar and vocal.
That was a sweet,
that
sweet
take. That came out great, yeah. I really love that, yeah. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Thank you.
You did listen carefully.
Oh my goodness, yes, yes. There's,
yeah.
I take it seriously. I've been listening to nothing but Kenny Vance and the Planetones for, gosh, ever since I got the package. I've been driving around with it, wow. So yeah, it's been a treat.
I'm the same way, you know. To me, this is so much more than a job. I mean, it's a way of life. I love listening to archival music and just, you know, music in general.
Oh, yeah.
It's a wonderful pursuit.
Absolutely.
If you look closer, it's easy to trace the tracks of my
movies for a bit. We alluded to a few things, and I'd love to get this fleshed out a bit. With Animal House, you were the music director, I believe. What exactly did that entail? You gathering the music for it? What does the music director for a movie do, or what did you do for Animal House specifically?
I think a music director or music supervisor can do many things. Elmer Bernstein did the score.
Okay.
So what they want me to do, they wanted me to help them find source music. Like, what song should we play over the food fight?
Oh, okay, okay.
You know, and so I would bring in different suggestions. In those days, let me try to think, I guess I had to find the 45s, you know? And we'd play them that way.
Wow.
You know, of course, they don't have to do that anymore. But, you know, I would play songs. We would put it up to the picture and see what songs worked. And then also, they wanted me to produce certain records for it. And I remember, you know, they wanted John Belushi to sing Louie Louie and Money, you know, the old Barrett Strong song.
Yep.
So I produced those two records with John Belushi. And then I also produced Stephen Bishop doing Animal House, you know, which plays at the end.
Yeah.
And also Dream Girl, which is sort of like a Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons type of record. And then I compiled, you know, the album using, you know, snippets of dialogue from the album and the oldies, some of the oldies, Sam Cooke and Chris Montez.
Yeah.
And then also using John Belushi. As a matter of fact, when we did the John Belushi record of Louie Louie, he said, you know, I used to sing this at a fraternity house with my band when I was a kid, and, you know, at fraternity dances. And so he did a take on a dirty version of Louie Louie. And I kept it at the studio.
Ooh.
And over the years, I always meant to go back and get it. And then by the time, you know, I finally, you know, got around to doing it, it was gone. So maybe it's floating around somewhere.
I'm David Fleming in conversation with Kenny Vance with the Planetones. He is part of the lineup soon with the Best of Doo-Wop Volume 6, along with Lala Brooks, The Capris, Larry Chance, and the a cappella group Classic Sounds. That's presented by LAR Enterprises. More at LARENTR.com. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 FM, streaming live at kvcrnews.org. Another one that we mentioned just a few moments ago, Eddie and the Cruisers. This was huge for me with John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band. So again, how did you end up getting involved with this? And did you bring in John Cafferty? How did this happen? And I know that you ended up in the movie here as well. So if you could just share your involvement, how it happened.
Sure. Let's see. It was 1984, I believe. Mm-hmm. I had just been working on Saturday Night Live like 2 years before, and then I'm not sure exactly what I was doing. I was always trying to do something, and I wound up going to a party in Manhattan, and there was a guy there by the name of Marty Davidson who was getting ready to do a movie called Eddie and the Cruisers based on a book by P.F. Kluge. So, you know, we met at the party and we started to talk. By the way, as time went by, I found out that he also was the writer-director of Lords of Flatbush.
Oh, cool.
And
okay.
Then also the director of the movie Looking for an Echo.
There's that one for
in
you.
In the year 2000. So anyway, we started to talk, and I said, you know, I used to be in a group that played on the Jersey Shore in Wildwood, where Eddie and the Cruisers were going to be playing in the movie. I said, yeah, I have a lot of pictures from those days, and I remember we used to take a Chevy convertible with a U-Haul on the back to carry our equipment to the Jersey Shore. He says, oh, wow. He says, do you think you could bring the pictures, he says, into the production office tomorrow? So I said, I'll meet you there. I'll bring the pictures, and, you know, we'll pick it up. We'll talk. So I went to the office and brought in some of the pictures. And, you know, he loved the pictures. And he said to me, well, let me play you the music. The music at that point had been written by Joe Brooks.
Okay.
Joe Brooks wrote You Light Up My Life. He was a very famous and wealthy jingle writer for writing commercials. So he played me the music, and he says, what do you think? And I said, it's not right. You know, it's like a jingles guy's version of what this is, but it's not really it. Now, you know how fate has so much to do with so many things.
Sure.
About a month or two before this encounter, I was in Greenwich Village in Manhattan, and I was walking down, and I passed by the famous Bitter End, where Peter, Paul, and Mary played,
right,
where Kenny Vance and the Planetones played, where Bob Dylan played, where Dave Van Ronk played, where,
nice,
you know, all of the famous folkies from the beatniks from the late 50s, and as a matter of fact, the Bitter End is still open. And I had walked in there, and there was a group on stage called John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band. And, you know, I watched them. You know, they were great. They had a sax player, and they had some really cool songs like Boardwalk Angel and Wild Summer Night.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And songs like that. And that was it, you know, and I left. And now Marty Davidson says to me, what do you mean? I said to him, well, you know, if you're going to make a movie with this, it has to be authentic. And film directors, sometimes they really know music, and sometimes, you know, they know film, and they rely on someone else to help them with the films. So he says, would you take the script home and read it? So I did, and I took the script home, and I'm reading it, and as I'm reading it, I'm visualizing John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band as the real-life Eddie and the Cruises.
Wow.
And it was true. It was true. I went back there the next day, and I said to him, you know, I know who this should be. He says, what do you mean? And I tell him the story I just told you, and he says, well, he says, could you bring me, you know, like something so I could hear it? Actually, they were playing in New Jersey. And I said, well, why don't you, you know, I'll come with me and I'll take you out there. And I took him out to this club where they were playing. And he said, absolutely, you know, this is it. This is it, man. Mm. He gave me a small budget and I went up to Pawtucket, Rhode Island, where they were from. I reached out, you know, in those days, there was no internet and there was no easy way to find them, but I had found them. And I went up there to meet with them. And I told them, you know, what this was. And the fact that they knew me from American Hot Wax, they were big fans of that movie, and they had seen me recording studio scene singing Come With Me.
Yeah.
They said, okay, great, man. You know, and I
cool.
said, they had been together for 11 years. They were about a day away from getting day jobs. It was over. It was over. So we wound up going into the studio, and he wrote On the Dark Side.
Mm.
And we recorded On the Dark Side. And I also recorded, I was the voice of Sal, who sings in the Holiday Inn, and I recorded those oldies but goodies, and I recorded Betty Lou's Got a New Pair of Shoes.
Wahoo, wahoo, and, wahoo, yeah.
Yeah, a song originally recorded by Bobby Freeman in San Francisco. And so I brought the tapes down, and you know, pretty much that was it. And then he made a deal with me to be the music director, and he made a deal with Cafferty to, you know, be the voice of Eddie, you know, Michael Paré, Eddie, from Eddie and the Cruises. And, you know, so then what happened was the movie came out. Nobody wanted the soundtrack. We had to give it away.
Oh,
and it came out on Scotty Brothers Records. We gave it away because in those days, you know, it was like disco. It was another world. So this was retro, and nobody wanted it, so we gave it away. The movie came out, and it was a bomb. And in those days, a few months after a movie came out, HBO just went on the air.
Yeah.
So if they picked up your film, they would play it 3-4 times a day.
Yep.
For a month. And I was making another record with Cafferty, a follow-up to that. I think it was called Tough All Over. We were in the studio, and I got a call from the distributor, which was Sony at the time, or maybe it was Columbia before they became Sony. And the guy says, hey, man, you're selling 25,000 albums a day.
Oh,
I said, what? He said, on Eddie and the Cruises. And then I found out it was on HBO, and it wound up selling 4 million copies, thank God, you know.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that's another phenomenal one. I don't think just for my age. That was one of those movies that I was into that Mom would walk in and stay. It was the music for her. It was phenomenal. I'm David Fleming in conversation with Kenny Vance with the Planetones. Once again, he's part of the lineup soon with the Best of Doo-Wop Volume 6. That's in Cerritos, along with Lala Brooks, The Capris, Larry Chance, and the a cappella group Classic Sounds. That's presented by LAR Enterprises. Tickets and more information at larentr.com. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 FM, streaming live at kvcrnews.org. We'll have more with Vance in just a little over a minute, including a start with Jay and the Americans. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR, streaming at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Find many KVC Arts shows via podcast through iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and NPR One. And all past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts.
This magic moment.
Let's go back now to my recent conversation with Kenny Vance. He'll be in the area soon with his group, The Planetones, and we'll touch on that again in just a bit. But first, going to the earliest of days, to right around the time the group he was in became Jay and the Americans. I'll come back to the Planetones in just a bit, but I do have a few questions about Jay and the Americans. I have spoken with Sandy Dean in the past. I had a wonderful conversation with him a few years ago. This is, well, separated from anything else that anybody's heard recently. So if you could first just simply describe for folks the significance of the Brill Building. And then while you tackle that, just what were you doing at the Brill Building when you ended up catching the attention of Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller?
Well, first of all, I go back to knowing Sandy from when I'm 14 or 15 years old.
Yeah.
I was a freshman, I believe, in the school, and he was maybe a senior or a junior. Hmm. And a friend of mine knew that he had a group, and this friend of mine knew that I would be sitting in my mother's basement and I could imitate the falsetto parts and the bass parts of all of these doo-wop records by Louie Lyman and the Team Chords. I'm so happy. So I wound up going over to their house, to Sidel Sherman's house, and we basically had a trio, Sandy, myself, and Sidel, and we wound up making a few records under the name The Harbor Lights.
Mm-hmm.
And you could actually hear them, if you go on YouTube, you know, you could hear them. And she was the lead singer. She was phenomenal. Unfortunately, she has passed away, but I get to see her brother every time I come out to L.A. because he comes to Cerritos to see the show.
Oh, cool.
And what happened was, so we made these records, and then Cousin Brucey, who's on Sirius Satellite, he started to play them in New York. He basically was a disc jockey in the early days, because these records came out, I want to say, 1959, 1960. And then we had a manager called Jim Gribble in 1697 Broadway, which was the Ed Sullivan Theater building where David Letterman did the late show every night. Let me just get back on track here. Trying to give you as much information as I can. And Jim Gribble managed the Mystics, the Passions. Paul Simon and Al Cooper were up there as young writers. Stan Vincent was up there, who wrote Ooh Child by the Five Stair Steps and Tonight Tonight by the Mellow Kings. And the lead singer of the Mystics that did Hushabye had a problem, and they had a new lead singer by a guy by the name of Jay Traynor. And Jay Traynor gravitated towards us, the Harbor Lights, and we decided that maybe we should start a new group. And a guy in our neighborhood knew Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller. So we got together in my mother's basement. It was me, Jay Traynor, Sandy, and a guy named Howie Kane, a childhood friend of Sandy's from Brooklyn. And we rehearsed a bunch of songs. And one of the songs that we rehearsed was a song that we knew by the Five Keys. It was called Wisdom of a Fool. And that also is on YouTube, our version of it. It's a cappella.
Oh, cool.
And we learned it, and we wound up going up to the Brill Building, which is at 1619 Broadway, and right down the street from where, you know, Irving Berlin had an office, in the 20s and 30s. So that whole area was known as Tin Pan Alley, where in those days, you know, a lot of the groups weren't self-contained, and there were writers that worked for publishers, and you would, you know, try to get songs to record from the publishers. So we went down there, and we auditioned with the song Wisdom of a Fool, you know, in front of Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller, and they liked what they heard. And in retrospect, you know, when I listen to Jay Traynor sing She Cried, or I listen to Jay Traynor sing any of those songs on the She Cried album, or the follow-ups, the guy was killer. He was 18, 19 years old, but he sang it from the heart. His performances are tremendous. And so they signed us up, and we recorded for them. And then in those days, you know, if you didn't have a hit, basically your career was over.
Yeah.
Even with the number one record in those days, we would play places, and we made $300 for the whole group. We'd pay commission on it. We'd have to buy suits. We'd have to get there. And so Jay Traynor had to support his mother, and he decided to leave. And we decided that was the end of it, because all of the groups that had preceded us, Drifters, the Coasters, the Chantels, Frankie Lyman, they didn't have hits. You know, that was it. They were done. And that's just the way it was. We never realized that this would last all these years. So we basically stopped, and we wound up going back to school. But, you know, it was in our blood at this point, and we decided to reform, and we called Jay Traynor, and he didn't want to do it anymore. So this guy Marty, who had joined our group as the guitar player, he knew a guy, Dave, that he grew up with. He was selling shoes at Tom McCann, making $60 a week. And he showed up, and he auditioned, and he sang Karamea. It was just a song that he had heard on the Ed Sullivan Show by a singing truck driver from London by the name of David Whitfield. And you could also hear that on YouTube. So, you know, we had that, and we brought him up to Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller's office, and they didn't want to record that, but they did want to record things, and so they brought in Van McCoy, and he produced a few records with us, and Burt Bacharach produced a few records for Jerry and Mike. We did Look in My Eyes, Maria, with him, and To Wait for Love. And then Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller had a track that they had just recorded with the Drifters called Only in America.
Right.
And they decided to take their voices off and put our voices on. And we wound up going over to Atlantic, where they had this new modern machine called an 8-track. Because up until that time, everything was 4-track. And we wound up putting our voices on there, and the record came out. And it was a huge hit in Florida, because all of the Cuban immigrants that had been coming over in 1963 couldn't speak English, but phonetically, Only in America became an anthem for them. Only in America. Land of opportunity.
Wow.
You know, so we would play down there, and we would pack in, you know, 800, 900 people, and we'd think, who are these people? What are they doing here? But that was, you know, years later, I have a good friend of mine. He's a famous film director, Leon Echazo, and he did El Cantante with Jennifer Lopez and Mark Anthony. But anyway, he told me the story I just told you. He says, when we came here, we couldn't speak English, but Only in America spoke to us. And that became our big anthem at the time. And, you know, then Only in America became a hit, and then we followed it up with Come a Little Bit Closer, and then after that, Let's Lock the Door, and then after that, Think of the Good Times, and then after that, they sold our contract to United Artists, and Jerry Granahan produced, finally, Karamea, which became a huge hit.
Wow.
And then as time went by, we opened our own office in the Brill Building. And in 1968, Donald Fagen and Walter Becker walked in, and I started to produce records with them. And they also played on our albums. And then in 1969, producing our own records, we made This Magic Moment and Walking in the Rain. And then the last time we did an album called Capture the Moment, which Becker and Fagen did all the horns on it and all the strings. And that's right around the time that I did Shuffling Up Your Downs, because I was doing a lot of lead singing with them with our side project, which was to make records with them. And then basically, you know, that came to an end. You know, the whole thing came to an end. And Donald and Walter wound up moving out to California. And then a year or two later came out with Can't Buy a Thrill. And I came out a few years later with my album of Looking for an Echo, Vance 32 on Atlantic. And then I wound up, you know, in the film business. And Jay Black continued with Jay and the Americans. You know, those were the three different offshoots of what took place.
Nice. That is just too cool. That is great. You know, just going into this, I knew there would be so many splinters and offshoots and incredible stuff here. And you mentioned Come a Little Bit Closer, and Sandy told me a story about that, and I was wondering if I could get your side of it. I understand that, one, that Jay Black wasn't very into the song Come a Little Bit Closer. Were you in the car that day? Sandy talks about he and Jay driving around, and Jay heard the song on the radio and then called and chewed out the A&R people, Mike Lipkin or somebody. Do you recall this? Were you there?
No. Okay, well, what happened?
Well, just Jay heard it on the radio and pulled the car over and screamed. Then Mike says, well, it's at number 19 with a bullet. And Jay said, okay. And then he hung up, and it was okay after that. But
well, you know, I remember the session. What had happened, it was produced by Artie Ripp.
Okay.
Artie Ripp also had produced Just One Look by Doris Troy and also had the Shangri-Las on his label, Walking in the Sand. And he was hired by Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller to produce us. And they had a song called Ciao Ragazzi Ciao. It was a song that was a big hit in Italy. And they spent, in those days, you know, you had a room full of musicians. Now, by today's standards, it's a joke. but they had a room full of musicians, Gary Chester on drums, Johnny Rodriguez on Kung the drums. And so in those days, the session was 3 hours. So they spent 2 hours and 45 minutes on Ciao Ragazzi Ciao, which was the A side. And then they said, uh-oh, we better hurry up. We got 15 minutes. What's the next song? And they said, well, come a little bit closer. So they have 10 minutes to record it. And I think maybe we did one or two takes on it. Boom, it was done. And that's it. You know, so then what happened, I guess, you know, we went home, and then Artie Rip, and they must have sent the stuff over to United Artists, and then they made a decision, obviously, to put out Come a Little Bit Closer. It came out, and then I guess the story that Sandy told you, you know, might or might not have happened, I don't know. I wasn't there.
All right. Well, let's see. Let's wrap by going back to the Planetones. And hopefully folks listening to this will be able to get out to Cerritos. So let's wrap it this way with the Planetones. What is a mainstay of just every performance? I mean, I could easily guess with something like Come Go With Me or something like that. There's got to be something that is just a constant that just resonates so well.
Well, it's Looking for an Echo. That's it. As a matter of fact, as we speak, they're developing a Broadway show of the movie Looking for an Echo.
Oh, cool. Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I hadn't read on that one any. Okay, wow.
No, I'm just telling you, I've just been going on that for about 6 months now, so I'm going to be the music director of that.
Oh, cool. Cool.
But Looking for an Echo, that's the one they want to hear. That's the song for us, yeah. David, it was a pleasure.
Really. Absolutely.
A pleasure. I enjoyed it going down memory lane, and thank you.
This has been great. Thank you so much.
For me, too. Thanks, Dave.
It's been a conversation with Kenny Vance for the entirety of tonight's KVC Arts. Once again, he'll be in the region quite soon with the Best of Doo-Wop Volume 6. That's in Cerritos, along with Lala Brooks, The Capris, Larry Chance, as well as the a cappella group Classic Sounds. That's presented by LAR Enterprises, with more at larentr.com. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Kenny Vance, and for getting me in touch with Kenny, thanks to Patty McGill and Lad Vance. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, and an extra big thanks once again this week to Shireen Awad. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. I'm David Fleming, thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.